Now, this is weird. I have done some freaky shit.
Hey, boys, I have a headache.
That makes absolutely no goddamn sense whatsoever.
Movies in the Buff.
Welcome back to Movies in the Buff, where we strip down, objectify, and thoroughly violate your favorite movies. Here's your team of debauchery. We have Carl.
She's not my girlfriend. I find her interesting because she's a client and she sleeps above the covers. 4 feet above the covers. She barks, she drools, she claws.
Sounds like the best dates I've ever had. Lisa?
I sleep 4 feet above the covers.
And I'm Rod. And if you haven't guessed by now, we will be buffing Ghostbusters.
If you haven't guessed by now, you did not live through 1985.
84.
It was 84, Carl.
Yeah, but this thing was big all through the 80s. So.
It's true. The really sad part is, and I'm just going to make y'all feel a little old for a minute, this came out 2 years before I was born.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I definitely feel old now. Well, thanks so much.
Well, you know, at least, you know, I wasn't yet in school when this movie came out.
Fair enough. After losing their academic post at a prestigious college, a team of parapsychologists goes into business as Ghostbusters who exterminate ghouls, hobgoblins, and supernatural pests, and are soon hired by a cellist to purge her digs of demons. What does a supernatural pest qualify as? A spectral cockroach?
Hey, I just want to see. I just want you to go with the purge her digs of demons and try and say that three times fast.
No kidding. I about didn't get it out once. Directed by Ivan Reitman.
Reitman.
Okay. Cast Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, Sigourney Weaver, Ernie Hudson, and pretty much everybody who was funny in the 80s.
Pretty much, you know, pick the cream of the crop from Saturday Night Live and take out a couple of people who just decided not to do it, but were originally written. The script was originally written for. Hey,
they were in the music video, so we'll give it to them. I want to point something out.
Well, they were dead.
Okay, and I just have to point this out on the air, just so that I have a record of this. One of the recent reviews that popped up on my Netflix site, and I don't know who posted this, and even if I did, I wasn't going to say their name, but... so unrealistic. I can't believe they made a movie based on such a silly cartoon. It's obviously just a bunch of cheap webisodes pasted together. And don't even get me started about the cast.
And this was about Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Somebody did not do their research considering at the very...
Okay, yes, there is a cartoon of Ghostbusters.
That came out,
but this is not what we're reviewing today.
Well, technically, the original cartoon came out at the same year, but it was a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But this won the AFI Top 100 Laughs, 1985 Academy Awards for Best Visual Effects nominee and Best Music Song nominee, and 1985 Golden Globe Best Actor in a Motion Picture nominee, Best Motion Picture nominee. So, I mean, this
Best Actor.
It doesn't say on here for the musical or comedy category. So, it doesn't say who it was.
Too bad.
Common sense media rating ages iffy for 10+.
Yeah. Anyway, so moving on into our roundtable. Okay, the librarian chick.
Yeah.
Best facial expressions.
What librarian do you guys know that was like that?
The New York Public Library.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I think that's the only one in the United States that had one like that.
No. There's I've been to a couple of libraries that are like that.
Were the librarians like that?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting tidbit of information. This particular role in the porn parody was played by what's his name?
I don't know. What is his name?
Probably the most famous male porn star of all time. He played in Boondock Saints.
Oh, yeah. Shit, and now I've just blanked on his name again.
I have too. It's on the tip of my tongue.
The Elvis guy.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway. Yeah. I got the sense from... I had the thought from watching this beginning scene, though, in the library, that all librarians sometimes kind of feel like this is happening when their backs are turned.
Truthfully, the books that wouldn't surprise me.
Reshelving themselves and moving around.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't actually surprise me much.
But anyway, okay, and then after the library scene, you know, they go into the song. And who doesn't know this damn song?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone that's over, you know, 10 years old knows this song.
Yeah. And yeah. Isn't it, was it just me, or did this feel like a modern television intro?
Kind of, yeah.
As opposed to a movie intro.
Kind of. Really weird tidbit on this. In this movie, the original script was extremely different from the what you see. It was a very dark, very edgy script that Dan Aykroyd had written. The Ghostbusters was supposed to be a team of public servants like police or fire, and there were supposed to be hundreds of them everywhere. I mean, like,
yeah, and they were supposed to be like they were supposed to be similar to SWAT or they're supposed to look more like SWAT teams.
Yeah. And it's so, I mean, consider how that got turned into this, and then just really think about it.
Yeah.
It's really weird. But anyway, so at the, you know, the second you see Venkman, you already know that he's going to burn in hell.
Yeah. Oh, I love him. He is such a sleazeball, but he's such
Did anybody notice that while he's doing the electric shock to the guy, the guy is getting all of her correct answers.
Yeah, and then he gets
corrects all of her answers.
Yeah, and then he gets his right and still gets shocked.
Now, see, what I'm trying to figure out is this guy related to Rick Moranis in any way?
The guy that was being shocked?
Yeah.
I don't think so, but I really...
But they do look a lot alike.
Oh, wait, Stephen Tash, here he is. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, it just seems like... just kind of seems like... Okay, so now for a university study subject, I don't know what the going rate is, but I just get this weird feeling it's a whole lot more than $5.
Yeah.
Even back in the 80s, I think it was more than $5.
Yeah, and for the record, Stephen Tash has been in a small handful of things from 82 to 88. He was in this and Christine and one episode of Different Strokes and a couple of comedies called Beach Balls and Snowballing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beach Balls and Snowballing.
Beach Balls is a movie and Snowballing is a movie.
Okay, so we just got a couple of balls going on. So anyway, and then you find, you know, they're doing the research in the library. And I know I'm moving ahead a little quick here, but most of this is just inconsequential crap.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're doing the research in the library, and all I have to say is I am sick of Hollywood's misuse of ectoplasm. Now, granted, it is a fictional subject. It doesn't exist. Well, technically it does, but it's a whole different thing. It's the outer wall of a cell, or part of the outer wall of a cell. Anyway, ectoplasm, the general concept in supernatural studies and metaphysics, is it's supposed to be the substance that is excreted from a medium's orifices during a seance.
It's also supposed to be the material that ghosts are made of.
Theoretically, but there's nothing actually in any kind
there's
of historical
no
text.
There's no scientific proof.
Well, no, because there isn't no scientific
there's
support
there's no
for ghosts.
There's no proof, period, scientific or otherwise.
No, but what I'm saying is there's no historical presence of it being what ghosts made of prior to Hollywood's creation of that myth. But there is historical documentation of the ectoplasm being used by mediums, which actually generally turned out to be some kind of cheesecloth or muslin that they would regurgitate in order to give the effect and make their money and con their way out of, you know, hard-earned cash. Mm-hmm. But anyway, still the clear ectoplasm all over the place. Because they had to find some substance that was slimy.
Well, I'd hate to be the person who cleaned up that guy's sneeze.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I thought while we were doing the porn booth scene in Boondock Saints, but that's beside the point. But then they see the ghost. And does anybody else think of the weird transition of regular person-style ghost to huge, weird 80s special effects monster?
I've always liked that scene.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of always liked
it. Of this whole movie, that's the one scene I hate.
That one didn't bother me. I liked it when I was a kid. It freaked me a little bit when I was a kid, but I liked it. And I just always liked it. So.
You know, the really weird part about this is Ghostbusters 1 and 2, I saw them when I was very, very young. I was a huge fan of the Ghostbusters mythos, to the point that I owned all the toys. I had the Ghostbusters mobile. I had the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I had it all. The movie never frightened me. Not ever.
It didn't frighten me. It just that scene, and there's a couple of others here and there that just, you know, made me jump a little bit. But yeah, that
more
one,
of a startle than a scare.
Yeah, that one came the closest of any of them to scaring me. But I always liked that transition of, you know, where she's, you know, not focused on them and just, you know, chilling out, doing her own thing, and looks fairly human, to when she turns to look at him and gets pissed off and just comes unglued.
Yeah, all I can say is I'm watching this movie this time, and I probably haven't seen this movie in 5 years, at least, and probably longer, actually. And so I'm watching it this time through, and I'm thinking during this whole librarian scene that, you know, that's a Carl plan. Where you look at us and say, no, don't worry, I got a plan. Get her!
Yeah, that's so much like a Carl plan.
That's not a Carl plan.
That's a Carl thing.
My plan is, my usual is one of the other scientists. Well, what do you want to do now?
Okay, the getter thing might be a Rod plan, truthfully. Yeah. But I would be like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to jump and try to grab her. Uh-huh. Carl would be the one, when he has a bad plan, to not let us in on it until the last moment.
See, Carl's plans involve intricate timing, a couple of Rube Goldberg machines, and detailed plans.
I don't want to talk about your last date.
Now, wait a second, Rod. I do want to talk about his last date.
Well, it was with a very, very horny girl.
Yes, it was.
Oh, self-deprecating high five, Lisa.
I don't want to hear about your self-lubricating body movements, Rod.
Too late. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, just listening to this, and our listeners who have been dedicated up to this point and listen to all of our shows, or at least most of them, know that at that point when you said that, I looked down before saying too late.
And then
I'm going to back up just a minute.
Okay.
When Peter Venkman asks the librarian, are you now menstruating? My first thought was, what? I looked at Carl and said, if she's menstruating, I'm pregnant.
Back off, they're scientists.
What's really, what I find entertaining, I was looking through the trivia and saw this, is, you know, he asked her about history of psychosis in her family.
Yeah,
and she said that she had her uncle who thought he was Saint Jerome, who is the patron saint of librarians.
Yeah, that was hilarious. But okay, so they get done with this and they go back to their offices to find out they're being expelled from campus.
Columbia. Oh, whoops! I'm sorry, I wasn't supposed to say that.
Crap!
It's in the contract.
Question.
Yeah, all of the campus scenes and their lab and everything was actually filmed on location at Columbia University.
Really?
And the only reason, the only stipulation was they could never say it was Columbia.
Nice. Very nice. Okay, so they get sent off campus, and that's when you meet Dana and Lewis, which were two
Lewis.
Worst possible characters ever.
Yeah. Note on Lewis is Lewis and Doors. LOL.
Yeah, and please, God, dear God, can we not go back to 1984 and reshoot this movie with the originally intended John Candy?
See, now, here's my problem. I never liked John Candy. Well, with exception of Uncle Buck.
I didn't even like Uncle Buck.
Like, he was a fat coke addict, which God knows how did you... Only Saturday Night Live people can be fat coke addicts. But here's a fat coke addict with the weirdest sense of pompousness and undeserved self-satisfaction I've ever seen in my whole life. And it comes out in every character he plays, and I just want to punch him every time I see him on screen. God, I hate the guy.
And he's still better than Rick Moranis.
That's true.
Or at least he's better than Rick Moranis was in 1984.
John Candy is one of the actors that turned me off of comedy.
Yeah, I could see that. Although I do have to admit, I did, when I was a kid, I did like his cartoon, like Candy Mountain or whatever.
I don't remember that one.
The other actor was the one who, in a movie, he played the guy with the really big nose.
Oh, Steve Martin. Yeah, I don't like Steve Martin either.
See, I like...
Yeah, those are the two actors that turned me off of comedy completely.
Really? I like Steve Martin. But anyway, okay, so... And Dana, to me, is the worst character. Now, I'm not talking about Zool. I'm talking about Dana. I love Zool. But Dana was the worst character in this movie. It's so bland.
I think she was supposed. I think she was intended to be.
I guess so, but and
I'm gonna go with the fact that I think she was intended to be because up until then she's just so straight laced.
Yeah.
Well, until she becomes Zool.
And she's supposed to be. I mean, she's a concert cellist and working for the New York Symphony.
Well, maybe it was necessary, you know, to anchor the rest of the characters into reality at least a little bit. But at the same time, it made her my least favorite character. And I'm including the freaking EPA agent played by Atherton.
Oh, God, I hated him.
Everybody hated him. It ruined his whole day.
My notes on him is exactly what he was called throughout the movie. Dickless.
Well, it ruined his whole damn career, but that's beside the point.
That's not true. He's still acting.
Yeah, he is. And he's a good actor. But he even almost didn't take the role because he didn't want it to ruin his career.
Yeah.
Because he was afraid it was going to.
He was in Die Hard.
He was in Die Hard.
Yes, he was.
The first two Die Hards, as a matter of fact.
But anyway, they get into her apartment. Or she gets into her apartment, and then you have the very, very nice Sumerian god who wants to make breakfast for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fried eggs on anyone? The couch.
Seriously. Why would you be scared of this? If a ghost wanted to make breakfast for me, I'd be like, hey, that's one less thing I have to do.
Yeah. I don't think she wanted a dozen
fried eggs.
The
problem is I want the ghost
eggs.
To clean up.
Well, you know, you get what you get. But...
If the ghost is going to make me breakfast, the least he can do is clean up.
I could eat a dozen fried eggs. If I was hungry.
I'd have to be hungry to eat a dozen fried eggs.
Anyway, and then, you know, she calls a ghost.
My one problem with this movie so far, up until this point, is the gargoyle overshots, or just the shots of the gargoyles, is overdone.
I didn't notice it.
I did.
Now that she says it, I kind of see it, but while I'm watching it, I didn't notice, so.
Yeah.
It is what it is, I guess. I had a question in here, actually, when he was doing the apartment search thing for the ghost.
Oh, yeah?
He had that instrument.
How the hell did he look in the bedroom?
Oh, yeah, there's a reason. I mean,
that's because he's Venkman.
Because he's Venkman, yeah. But, no, that instrument he keeps pumping, I was like, what the hell is that? And then I get to looking in the trivia, it's an old-fashioned sniffer, is what it is. Which is weird, because I've worked with sniffers before, but I've never seen one like that.
Yeah.
What the hell is a... sniffer.
It takes in gas and oxygen readings around it and tells you how much of what's around and if it's lethal. Or I worked with them when I was working security at a plant because they dealt a lot with ammonias and stuff like that, and people would have to use them when they went in the ammonia tanks. But anyway, yeah, it's just a really old-fashioned sniffer that was supposedly modified to detect supernatural entities. Yeah. They really went kind of cheap with certain things in this movie.
Oh, it was hilarious.
Yeah, but then, okay, then they go in after Slimer. And the first thing that happens is they take out the maid.
Yeah, or the maid cart anyway.
Yeah, the maid cart. It's like, okay, can you tell these guys are a little on edge?
And new at their job?
Hey, it was an equipment test.
And all I can say is some cockroach.
Yeah,
but
and for those who are fans of the cartoon later, just seeing him again is so much fun.
See, I don't remember him in the cartoon, but then again, it's been since the '80s, and I was not.
Yeah, Slimer was the mascot.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, he was like their mascot. It was so much fun.
In the trivia, Dan Aykroyd said that he was attributing Slimer as the ghost of John Belushi.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool, I thought.
And looking back at it, I can kind of see that.
Yeah, I really can too. But anyway, I love the way that Dan Aykroyd, when he sees the ghost, the cigarette sticks to his mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was awesome. And that was done by his own saliva. They were going to glue it to his mouth. And
I told Carl, I was like, does he ever drop? Oh, wait, there he goes. He dropped it.
Well, it was just funny because they were going to glue it on, but they decided to do one take first to see if he could keep it, and it worked. And it stuck to his mouth, which is really wild. But and then I got
Now,
slimed.
for those of our audience who don't smoke, that is a very difficult trick.
Yeah.
I have yet to do that.
And God, it hurts when you do it on accident.
I've never done that.
I will take your word for that.
I have, as you recall, back when I was smoking. Obviously, I've not been in several months now. But back when I was smoking, I had a lighter that was rigged to shoot, high flame, as they call them, crack lighters.
I remember that lighter.
Yeah, if you remember, I burnt my mustache, part of my mustache off with it.
Yep.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I have on occasion had one stick to my bottom lip, and when you go to take it out of your mouth, and my fingers slide along the edge of it and catch the cherry.
Oof.
That's painful.
Ouch. That would be, well, that's not, I mean, my fingers are used to getting burned at this point. Giggity.
The only time the
We're getting sidetracked.
We are.
the only time fire actually hurts anymore is if it's hot ash on the back of my hand.
That's exactly what I said. The only time fire hurts anymore is if it's hot ass.
I said ash. I'm not talking about your imaginary love life.
Well, I've got to have an imaginary love life. It's the only kind of love life I have.
It's the only kind
Yeah,
he's been able to
exactly.
get.
Let's not go too far there. I've been able to fit into my schedule. Anyway, so then you have I Got Slimed. An interesting tidbit. I don't remember which. It was like Highlights Magazine or Mad Magazine or something. Anyway, there was a parody of Ghostbusters that was the Toastbusters.
Oh, God.
And this
Oh,
scene
God.
was done. It was the same names and everything. The scene was done, only the toast attacks him. And he looks up and he goes, "I got buttered." I don't know. Horrible side note there, but
Yeah.
yeah, I've had several girls tell me they got slimed.
So then we get through the first job.
That's
Oh
when
no!
it's
Then
time
you
for you
find
to
out
wake
you
up,
don't
Rod.
cross the streams
Oh, yeah.
because it would be bad, and you don't look at the trap.
I looked at the trap.
Yeah, everybody looked at the trap, and the "don't cross the streams" have made many a piss joke since then. We won't get
Yep.
into it. And then finally you get a montage in which they
Because it's
hire
the 80s.
Hudson, which
I
I
believe
love.
that's our
You had
first
to.
montage movie ever.
No.
Oh.
The fighter had
The
montages.
fighter.
No. I don't mean ours as in the three of us. I mean as in the first movie that ever had one.
No, Rocky was in
Now.
the 70s.
Yeah.
And you know
I
the
don't remember Rocky. I haven't seen Rocky since I was younger than you are.
But anyways.
And I just have one note to make about the montage. Larry King as a talk radio host in New
Okay.
York. Now
For the
come
record,
on.
this was his
Yeah, that was
first,
kind of cool.
this was his film debut.
Yeah, and I've just got to point out that and I should probably save this for Best Buffed, but I am officially, as of right now, giving Larry King the Montage King Award.
Yeah, how many montages has he appeared in now?
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay, well, we'll save that for Best Buffed, but I do just have to say that this is our second movie with Ernie Hudson.
Is it?
And so yeah, The Crow.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And so far he's done no wrong, and he has some of the greatest one-liners.
Yeah.
Oh man, in every movie he does, he delivers one-liners great.
I wish that as much as I wish that we'd had Jim Carrey instead of Rick Moranis as Lewis, I really am kind of questioning whether or
John
not
Candy.
or yeah, John Candy.
Jim
Sorry,
Carrey. That would have been
I'm really
awesome.
qu sorry. I'm really
Dude.
questioning whether or not, I would have preferred Eddie Murphy, who was originally cast, instead of Ernie Hudson.
And I just have to say, Eddie Murphy made a decision there, and it was a
Yeah.
good one. It was right for him. He went on, he did the Beverly Hills Cop movies, which I loved. And they paid off a lot better than Ghostbusters did. It was good.
And he turned around and
Yeah,
also did Shrek.
I'm just trying to picture, I'm trying to picture him in this role, and it would have been a much different character, I think.
It would have. And it was scripted to be a much different character. He was supposed to start out at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
As soon as they established their company, he was supposed to be hired. The scene in which he was hired, there was actually an alternate scene to this, where he lists his qualifications and like he's a combat vet. He worked construction. He was a field medic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of qualifications he had going into this.
Cool.
And I just have to point out later on, well, this might be somebody's question, so I'm not going to point that out.
Oh, okay.
You can point it out later if we don't ask it.
There we go.
How's that?
And then we get out of the montage finally, and we get to hitting on Dana round two.
Yeah. The dancing and the...
Yeah, and who just think who just you know kind of had to laugh when they see him skipping around in the
street
courtyard there?
Yeah, the fountain area.
Yeah,
but I laughed because of the pompous ass that he's like making fun of.
Oh yeah,
very passive aggressively making fun of through this whole scene.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the dude in Ghostbusters 2 is who it made me think of.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of. I could see that.
Then we get our first introduction to EPA Jackass.
Yeah.
Or Dickless, as I like to call him.
Peck. And I love all of the Venkman versus Peck scenes because this is ultimately a battle of wits and only one person's armed.
Yeah. And it's not William
Atherton.
And it wasn't
Peck.
No, it definitely wasn't Peck. And then, you know, it shows I just have to point out, while they're doing this scene between Venkman and Peck, they have a cutaway to the top of, to the top of the apartment building, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to say, a good rule of thumb, no joke to the last episode intended, but a good rule of thumb when you're searching for an apartment, if there's an altar on the roof, don't move in. And this is coming from the Christian of the group.
Hey, and there's not an altar on the roof to begin with, though.
See,
that ended up being...
No.
No, I didn't. No, that was... Big door frame and all of that, but there was an actual altar.
Not at the beginning, no. It's just it's a really strange triangular shape, which actually is of... it's the top of a building in St. Louis.
Okay.
I forget what the building is, but yeah. That's actually the roof of that building at the beginning of the movie is a model of a building in St. Louis.
Okay, fair enough. But, you know, after Venkman versus Peck round one, you have Louis' party.
Yeah, God.
Yeah. There's
a man who is trying entirely too hard.
Okay.
In everything.
Anybody else think, stop talking Rick?
Oh, God, yes.
Oh,
I think that every time I see him in a movie.
His voice.
And then he just keeps talking in this scene.
Skull. But anyway.
It got better as he got older, but yeah.
Yeah.
I hate listening to that.
Yeah, by the time he hit Honey, I Blew Up the Kid and Spaceballs, he was a pretty good actor.
Still his voice.
Yeah.
Even in those movies.
Yeah, that didn't change.
Out of my skull. But anyway, I do love the fact that when he's getting attacked outside of this restaurant, you know, people barely even look up.
Yeah. They can barely even hear him.
Yeah.
And I just got to take this point to say, nice doggies.
I want one of those dogs.
All right, who brought the dog?
I love how it goes from dog to bear to dog as he's going through this chase scene.
Yeah.
And this was the point, this whole dog chase scene, was the point where I realized these are actually some really good effects for 1984.
Yes, and I pointed this out to you earlier, Carl, and I have to point this out on the air. Richard Edlin, the visual effects supervisor for this movie, did several amazing movies. Die Hard, the original three Star Wars, Aliens 3, hundreds of others. I'm exaggerating there, but... It's still
lots of others anyway.
At least dozens of others. This man is a visual effects genius, is all I can say. I have never seen anyone with such an interesting and illustrious rap sheet in the visual field. And personally, he is probably my new mentor because I love his work.
Yeah, he does. Like I said, for 1984, these effects are spectacular. And even, you know, on a modern television streaming on Netflix, they hold up fairly well.
They do.
I mean, you can see some, you know, splice lines around the dogs, but for the most part, it was fairly seamless looking.
Yeah.
Okay, only those people like you who are a computer geek can tell that there's splice lines around the dogs.
The really interesting part...
I didn't see them.
And I read a little bit about the technical specs of how they did this. He actually went frame by frame. Do you know how long that takes?
Oh, yeah, it takes a long time. Yeah.
He actually went frame by frame, touched up every frame as if it was a picture that he was looking at. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
There's a couple of
wonky spots where you can tell that the dog is like claymation.
Yeah, but still.
But yeah, I mean, it was really good.
Then you have, are you the keymaster?
No.
You have some.
He's the one who asks, "Are you the keymaster?" Uh-huh. She's the one who says, "Are you the gatekeeper?"
No, you got him backwards. He is
the
key.
Sure?
Yeah, he's the keymaster. She is the gatekeeper.
The only reason, the way that you can remember this is the person with the vajayjay, it has the gate.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
That's the point. Is a penis is a key, a vajayjay is a gate.
And the next time you say vajayjay, I'm quitting.
Really?
Yes, I hate that word.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
How many movies have we seen that in now?
I actually heard it recently in American Dad, and I've been saying it since, to be honest, because they sang it in a song. Anyway, okay.
I dislike that word from an ex-coworker of mine. She said it a lot, and I just wanted to shake her and call it by its crude version.
So I'll just go back to calling him Dick and Cooch.
Yeah, there you go.
That works.
Anyway, all right, so anyway. You have, are you the keymaster? I love the fact that he asked the horse if it's the keymaster, because how...
The gatekeeper, you mean?
That's what I meant, the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Because how is this going to turn out in the middle of Central Park?
Yeah, that's... When I was watching it this time, I'm like, wait a minute. I know what happens later, and that wouldn't look right if that horse actually was.
Hey, I just got to point out that were the horse to be the gatekeeper, this would be a whole different kind of dog and pony show.
Oh, that ain't right.
That ain't right.
And now you guys all have that image in your head. Thank you.
No, I don't. But that's because I'm purposely trying not to have that image.
Okay, so taking care of Vince/Louie, which is funny that the cops actually just decided to drop him off at Ghostbusters.
Yeah, they're like, Bellevue doesn't want him, and we're afraid to put him in lockup, so we figured we'd come and see if you guys would take him.
Yeah, that happens in real life.
Hey, but it shows that they're fine, that they're actually getting, you know, kind of, that they're actually getting accepted from all the work they've been doing.
And, you know, I'm just going to take this moment to point out, after watching this movie, spoiler alert, and, you know, they're so loved at the end of this movie, to go into the second one where they're so not, it's like, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I always, I just liked that about the second one.
Yeah, never made a lot of sense to me. But then you have Ernie Hudson getting theological.
Yep.
Which was interesting.
Oh, and one thing about the taking care of Lewis that I got to point out. Did y'all notice the TV screen from their equipment?
No.
You know,
the dog head.
Yeah, because it was showing the spirit.
Yeah, it was showing the thermal imagery, and it had the dog head.
Yeah. And I thought that was a really cool, just a little touch there.
That was a nice touch. But then you have the EPA shutdown. Oh, has there ever been a worse idea in all of film?
Yeah, the blonde of the group knew that was a dumb idea.
Hey, I love the guy, though, from Con Electric, who's like, I've never seen this shit before. I don't want to touch it. That was a smart man who made a really stupid decision in the end.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then you have Chaos Ensues, which, of course, everyone who knows me knows I love chaos.
Sometimes literally.
Yeah, sometimes. She's a wonderful, wonderful stripper.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
God, wake up!
Oh, sorry. Did I doze for a minute?
Yes, you did.
But then you have the song I Believe in Magic, which, for the record, I like. I don't know why I like it, but I like it.
Yeah,
I like
terrible.
The song, but I don't believe it belonged in this movie.
Well, he couldn't play Ghostbusters every time something happened.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
That makes sense. So finally, you get the Ghostbusters put in jail.
Yep.
And the Gozer worshippers find each other.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Because that makes...
You wouldn't have a movie if you didn't.
And all I have to say, though, there are two people I've ever seen on TV that I can honestly say there is no woman in the world that would possibly have sex with them. And yet both of them have bread. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being Rick Moranis, obviously.
Yeah.
The second being Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I like how it was described in one of the roasts when they said Gilbert Gottfried had all of the sexual attraction of a school bus fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his voice makes me think of nails on chalkboard.
I play Iago. Anyway.
But yeah, if there are two people in this movie who less belong in a love scene together, it's, you know...
Those two.
Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis.
Although I will say that once they put her in that red dress, Sigourney Weaver looked so much better.
I was shocked to say that Sigourney Weaver actually looked somewhat good, ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so, but anyway, and while the Ghostbusters are in jail, from everything going on, it's all completely eclipsed by the fact that I couldn't stop thinking, how many times does the guy who played Carl Winslow play a cop?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Typecasted anyone?
Let's see. We've got Family Guy, right? No, not Family Guy.
Family Matters.
Family Matters, Die Hard.
Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
Die Hard 2. There was several.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
And I'm sure there's more that we just haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. And the weird thing is, I'm watching that 70s show the other day. The guy from Beverly Hills, Prince of Bel-Air, the uncle, plays a cop on that 70s show.
Mm.
Really weird, huh? Anyway, then you have the mayoral meeting. And I loved the mayoral meeting.
Oh, yeah.
The whole scene.
Oh, yeah.
I love the fact that, you know, you've got the, what was that, the Archbishop of New York?
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in the corner playing politician. You've got...
Wait, no, the Archbishop is the guy who comes in and talks to the...
I know, but while they're all talking, he's sitting in the corner, and the mayor's looking at him, and he's kind of giving him yay or nay advice.
Oh, yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, he was. That's a statement, or that's a look directly at the fact that the Catholic Church was so powerful in New York.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that's a believable scene right there, especially for the time.
Yeah, but
and you've got the other police going, I don't know what the fuck we're supposed to be doing. We've done everything we know what to do.
Yeah, the police and fire commissioners.
But
and
yeah,
then you've
got
Nicholas
on here, and then you got the EVA guy who's still trying to, for some reason, hold a grudge against these guys.
Yeah, and he's still trying to blame them for his fuck up.
Yeah, which is very
that was one thing that when I was first saw this movie. Granted, I was only a teenager. I'm thinking, why is he still trying to blame them? It's his fault.
But I love Venkman's comment to the mayor where he's saying, you know, what if you're wrong? He says, if we're wrong, we go to jail, happily.
We'll enjoy it.
But if we're right, then you just saved all of New York. And it's like, Venkman, you are such a damn politician. Like, you missed your calling.
Yeah, you should have run for mayor. You would have just saved millions of your potential voters.
Yeah.
Duh.
Oh, the man missed his calling, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But
and now I need a new quote.
I'm sorry.
He didn't say all of it.
Yeah, you did. Between the two of you, you said the whole thing.
I'm sorry. I was trying not to. And I completely forgot which. Like, I knew something in this scene was your quote, but I couldn't remember which part.
That's all right.
So, but anyway, then you have.
I'm going to go with my other one.
Then you have the procession of the Ghostbusters police and National Guard. It's like, let's run some red lights.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of cool.
And then all the people praying. Out on the street.
Yeah,
and the mayor
all
just
the different religions. Even.
Yeah.
And in the street trying to swallow them.
Well, not only that, this was such a statement of the time of like all these different religions out there praying on the street. Like that was the 80s in a nutshell right there.
Yep.
But
there's
anyway.
Another 80s thing too, the drugs.
Yeah. Now actually I just have to say the comment on you know the street tries to eat them. In my notes I have that as goes or breaks ground. And then in all comedies you have the traditional comically tall stairwell.
Yeah, and I just want to make a statement, and I apologize if I run over anybody's trivia question here. That building looks way taller than they say it is.
Yeah.
And what's really funny is the building that they used to shoot this movie isn't as tall as they say it is.
Yeah.
But it still looks taller.
Yeah.
Well,
as they say, as Venkman says, where are we? Somewhere in the teens. Well, let me know when we get to 20. I'm going to throw up. That looked like it had more than 20 floors.
Well, it was 22 is what they got off on.
Right, and that was supposed to be the top floor because she had the penthouse apartment. And that building looked way taller than 22
floors.
That
looked more like 30 floors.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And why are they walking up? Because I asked this during the movie.
I told you, the power was out.
Well, not only the power being out, but the streets are breaking apart. Obviously, earthquakes are going on. Do you want to get in an elevator?
With an earthquake going around? No, thank you.
Yeah. But anyway, you have the comically tall stairwell. And here's a point that I want to make. I forgot the name of the law that we've talked about in previous episodes, where if you show a gun in the first act, you have to fire it by the third.
Oh, yes.
Personally, I think that there should be a law in filmmaking that if you show a tall stairwell such as this, especially with the rounded nature, somebody has to fall down the damn thing. Either falling down the stairs or going down the middle. But somebody needs to fall down it.
Well, who are we going to make fall down it in this movie? Gozer?
Oh, come on. Think about this. Would Dan Aykroyd not be so funny going back down the stairs head over foot?
Well, that's
true.
That would
be hilarious.
Oh,
or Dickless going down the middle of it.
There you go. Anyway, go ahead, Carl.
For the record, that is called law is Chekhov's gun.
Chekhov's gun, yeah.
Anton Chekhov is the guy who mentioned it.
Yeah, I just never can remember all their names.
Yeah,
but I remember the laws, but I can't remember their names. So anyway, then you have summoning Gozer, and they turn into dogs. Because all right, she's a dog.
Yeah.
And all I have to say is, Venkman, get a hold of your bitch.
And for the record,
so who does Tully belong to?
For the record, the chick who plays Gozer is actually a model from Yugoslavia.
Really?
Yeah. I just never understood 80s chicks.
Yeah, well.
Anyway.
On that one.
And this just sounds like something Carl would say here. Go get her, Ray.
Yes, and Ray's next line is something you would say.
What was it? I don't remember.
As the duly representative the city, county, and state of New York, I order you to hereby cease and desist.
That is something I would say.
Yeah.
Are you a god?
Yeah, that would be my line. Are you a god?
Yes. Yes, I am. Thank you.
No, you're not. You are so not a god. You're dreaming again. Wake up.
That's not what I'd be telling her right then. Because when someone asks you if you're a god...
Yeah, I know. You're supposed to say yes.
You just did it again.
You never told me that one.
I told you
yes,
that was going to be a backup.
I guess I wasn't listening when you told me then.
When do you ever listen to us?
You can take one of mine. Anyway. Yeah. So then you have choose the form of the destructor.
Anyone for marshmallows?
I like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man being the destructor.
I did too.
Like, I thought that was awesome.
I tried to think of the most innocent little thing, something that could never ever hurt us.
Anyway.
Okay, Rod, Carl has gone. Bye bye.
Oh, that would have been Carl's quote right there. That should have been it.
Yeah.
So anyway, they just set off an explosion on the top of New York and survived.
Yeah.
Like, they set off essentially a nuclear explosion when they shoot this gate at the ceiling of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they're still alive. And did you see the size of that explosion on top of the building?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
That makes sense.
Well, I think according to what I understand of the very, very loose science in this movie.
Loose being the operative word.
Loose like Zool.
The science in this movie is looser than some of Rod's dates.
No.
The ones he dreams about.
Yeah.
And I've just got to say that according to what I understand of it, the idea is that, you know, it's a dimensional rift. The explosion actually took place and was mostly absorbed by the other dimension. And what they got was the flame blast that actually came over their heads.
Yeah.
Kind of like Backdraft.
I'm going to go with Harrison's Law on this one.
It's not that kind of movie.
It's not that kind of movie.
Yeah.
I can give you that.
Anyway, so, okay, yay, everybody survived, and we're having a party. And, you know,
did anyone notice that when they shoot pan over the crowd, you can still see the EPA dickless guy, but he's covered in marshmallows?
Okay, there's actually an interesting trivia note about that where the marshmallow stuff falls on him.
Mm-hmm.
The original pack that they had of marshmallow cream was 75 pounds. But they're like, it's 75 pounds of marshmallow. It's like getting hit by 75 pounds of feathers.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
It says, okay, so we need to test this. So some poor stunt guy gets underneath this thing and they let it go. And the 75 pounds of marshmallow cream falls on him and just smashes him, puts him in the hospital.
Ow.
And
it just smashes him. And they're like, okay, so we're going to do half the amount.
What's half of 75, guys?
So they ended up doing
heavy.
They did for the actual film, and so he was okay. But yeah, 75 pounds of marshmallow cream falling on your head is going to hurt.
Yeah.
What kind of dumbass physicist came up with this? But anyway, so that would be the end of our roundtable. That was a really quick roundtable.
Yeah,
oh wait! I have one note at the end of this movie that I've just got to point out, and I didn't catch it until this time. But Ray actually tips the doorman as they're getting into the car.
Oh yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, because the doorman was helping them get their packs off and load them into the Ecto-1, and he tips him.
Actually, do you know what the name of that actual car is?
The actual name of it is the Ecto-1, but I don't remember what the car itself is. An old ambulance.
The car itself is an old hearse, but
it's an old ambulance turned hearse.
Yeah, the actual scripted name of the car was the Ecto-Mobile.
So, yeah, that's right.
So interesting.
They always called it the Ecto-1. So.
Yeah, they always called it the Ecto-1, but it's actually the Ecto-Mobile. But anyway, okay, so buff quotes. Carl, do you need a quote?
No, I actually do have one. Where is it? This is very appropriate for me because, you know, I couldn't go back and do my, blasphemous one, which I haven't done in a few weeks because you stole it.
Sorry.
But I'm going to go with the, I'm fuzzy on the whole good, bad thing. What do you mean bad?
That does sound like you.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Well, there's a reason for that. Venkman, Dan Aykroyd, when he wrote Peter Venkman, was basing this on the future me. So
yeah, there you go. I don't believe that for a second. Lisa.
Tell me.
Lisa, buff quote.
I actually have two.
Go for it.
And I'm going to do one like you did last week. I'm dedicating it to an ex.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick. Was actually a ringtone for a while.
I remember that.
Yep.
Anyway.
My other quote is, since I've joined these men, I've seen shit that'll turn you white.
You know, for the record, just so you know, it's going to be a ringtone again, only it's going to be you saying it now.
Oh.
Yay.
We have another Lisa ringtone. Anyway. Okay. and
my. What are you going with?
This one's just for you, Carl. I don't have to take this abuse from you. I've got hundreds of people dying to abuse me.
Yeah, that's true.
Ain't that the truth?
And
just not the kind of abuse he wants.
Thank God I don't have to deal with that drama.
Anyway. And just for all of us, because I think this just suits in our given situation, any one of us would have said this. We've been going about this thing all wrong. Mr. Stay Puft is a sailor. He's in New York. We get this guy laid, we won't have a problem.
Yep.
Because that's something any one of the three of us would have said in that situation. Yeah.
About Richard.
pick on him so much. And Brad, too, for the record.
Oh. Anyway.
I hope both of them listen to this show.
I know Brad hasn't listened to an episode yet. Which
that's
really
Brad's an asshole.
Well,
yeah, well, somebody needs to kick him in the ass and make him listen.
He can't sit still that long.
One-star reviews from listeners named Brad.
Yeah. Anyway, Best Buffed. Carl, you want to start us off? Because I didn't do any Best Buffed.
Okay. Well, for starters, we've already given Larry King the Montage Master Award. And I think this was his first. This was his first appearance in a montage.
This was his first appearance in a film.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
that comes to the same difference when we're talking about Larry King for the most part, doesn't it?
True.
And I also have best to date of movies that we've done. Best example of possession to Zool.
There you go.
Actually, no.
I was fixing to do that one. No, go ahead, because I was going to do it. So.
Yeah, well, I was going to say of films we've seen to date. Actually, I'm going to title this award as the John Goodman from Fallen Best Possession Award.
There you go.
Because that was a really good possession.
Yeah.
And also, at the same time, this movie is garnering the Worst Example of Possession Award, and that goes to Vince.
Nice.
But those are my best buffs.
Okay. Lisa?
Best use of bestiality.
I am so glad you said that, actually.
And we have yet another Lisa ringtone.
I knew you guys were going to go for that.
Lisa, can I just get you to say one thing? Can you go here, doggy doggy?
Why? Do you need to come?
No, we need another ringtone.
Oh.
And I still got one out of her.
That is awesome. Why do you need to come?
You guys realize I said that on purpose.
Yes, I know.
Any other best buffed, Lisa?
Worst dancing.
Okay, I got you there.
Yeah.
I agree with you there.
It was 1984. There was no good dancing.
At least not by white people.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely not by white people.
Oh. Anyway. Any others?
And that's it for my best buff.
Okay, I have the Crossing the Streams Bullshit Science Award.
I will give you that one.
Venkman gets the Politician's Award.
Yeah.
Because he is the best politician to date in a movie we've done so far.
Yeah.
And I also have to give Richard Edlund the Best 80s Effects Award.
Yep.
Okay.
Because that is the best effects I've seen in an 80s movie yet.
Yeah. Oh, and just because you gave it the Bullshit Science Award, I would like to point out that the packs that they wear, one the major component of them is a nuclear accelerator, or is a particle accelerator.
Yeah, that's
which, you know, are still building sized.
Yeah, I know. That's
I found that really
entertaining. So we're just going to go with the whole Bullshit Science Award goes to the entire movie.
Crossing the Streams Bullshit. Well, the funny thing is I mentioned those packs in Rod's rants later, so. Yeah. Anyway, where are you playing with your Willy time? The segment in which we ask each other questions and decide who is paying attention to the movie and who is playing with their Willy. Lisa, you want to start us off?
When the Ghostbusters rescue Tully and Dana from being stone dogs, what is Tully's response to them?
Where am I?
Who are you guys?
That's probably it.
That wasn't the one I picked, but yes, he did say that.
What were you thinking?
Who does your taxes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was later on, though.
That was right after he said, or right after the, who are you guys?
Yes, it was right after that. My next question. Mm-hmm. What hand does Tully wave with?
Oh, God.
His right.
I'm going to go with Carl right.
Since Carl said it first, he gets the point.
Yeah, by the way, I'd forgotten that one. Okay, Carl?
All right, my turn. Okay, let me see. I'm trying to decide which one of these. Okay. Their first actual call to go catch Slimer is to what hotel?
Oh, Park Barrington?
I have no idea.
The Sedgwick.
Sedgwick. I don't know why I always think that's the Park Barrington that they're in.
And... all right. When they're in the library and Venkman reaches out and Venkman grabs Ray by the ear and pulls him back behind the stacks, what does he call Ray?
Patricia.
I'm going to go with Rod on that one because I'm not real sure.
Francine.
Francine. That's actually in the trivia on IMDb. Yeah, I was trying to find it.
Yeah, and Ray's he does that because Ray's middle name is Francis.
No, actually, there's another reason behind that.
Is it? Okay, I was always thinking that it was because of Ray's middle name was Francis.
Okay, so now I'm not more able points. To find it. Yeah, it's my turn to ask questions. I'll find that here in a minute, and I'll interrupt us if I can. Okay. What was the name of the building Venkman worked in at the beginning of the movie? The building, not the university, the building.
Oh,
And I'm looking for the full name here.
The basement. I don't know.
No, Weaver Hall.
Weaver Hall what?
Laboratory, I don't know.
Weaver Hall Department of Psychology.
Oh, okay.
But we'll give it to you.
Yeah, which, by the way, is A, in the trivia, and I did look, and B, is fictional.
Yeah, I know it was fictional. But they, in the when it's coming up on it, it shows a nameplate on it. That's where I got it from.
And I did, for the record, look at the trivia, so I'm not going to take credit for that point.
Okay, fair enough. What was the dean's last name? That's also on IMDb.
Dean, what's his face?
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
Jaeger.
Jaeger, that's right.
Of course Rod would know that one. It's his drink.
Yeah.
I don't like Jaeger.
Although spelled completely differently.
Yeah, it is spelled differently. But
all right, and audience questions.
Audience questions. Lisa started us. Lisa can start it this time.
Venkman says he shoots Dana up with Thorazine. How much Thorazine did he shoot her up with?
5 million cc. Oh, wait, no, that would kill someone.
Do not quote Rod. That would definitely be wrong.
All right.
Go ahead, Carl.
I have two of them. And one of them is easy and one of them is fairly hard. What is the phone number to the Ghostbusters from their commercial?
Okay, the commercial in the movie or the commercial that played as...
The commercial that played in the movie.
Okay.
And... Which of the three, because you only ever see this happen in one scene and Winston isn't there, so he doesn't count. But which of the other three Ghostbusters doesn't drink?
I honestly don't even know that one.
Neither do I.
Wow. Good question. Yeah, way better than the one question I was going to ask, because I'm going to go easy on our audience again, mainly because I forgot to come up with an audience question. What was Dana and Tully's occupations, and one of them was said earlier in the episode, so if y'all were listening to us, you at least have half of it. And remember, if you answer any or all of these audience questions, you will be mentioned on the show and given proper recording devices and Skype loaded onto your computer. You may receive a Skype call during the episode.
Yep. So send your responses to inthebufffilms@gmail.com.
And we have no new 5-star reviews last I checked, which was just before we started recording. So we'll move on into mental debuff. Carl, you want to start us out since you are the winner of Were You Playing With Your Willy?
This movie, it's fun. It's entertaining. It still friggin' holds up almost 20 years later. Like, we're 18 years in, you know, past the premiere of Ghostbusters, and the movie still holds up. I mean, this is a certified classic.
Carl?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're way over 20 years since the premiere.
Wait.
It was 84, Carl.
Yeah, we're pushing 30
I'm sorry. 28 years.
28 years since.
Bad math. Long day.
Wow.
And I thought my math was bad.
Well, I was like, 18 years? That doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
We are no longer in the 90s.
No, it's not that. It's that I dropped the aughts when I was doing the math in my head.
Yeah, that's all right.
I completely forget about the aughts.
Yeah.
Almost entirely.
There you go. Lisa, mental debuff.
Okay, before I start my mental debuff, considering I don't have a Willy and Carl won that, what does that say about me?
You were playing with my Willy?
Yeah, but that should have distracted you. Obviously, I'm not doing very good at my job.
Some girls just aren't handsy enough.
Okay, that one I'll give you. All right, my mental debuff is, yes, I agree with Carl, this is a classic, but there is so much bullshit in it that it just makes it a comedy.
Oh, it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah.
I like the bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, the bullshit is, you know, entertaining.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not bullshit that you just want to strangle somebody with.
I do honestly want to see the original script made into a movie because it just makes me really curious.
Mm-hmm. It does.
But anyway.
It does make me curious. It's a classic, but it's not one of those that I would sit down and watch again anytime soon. Not because I don't like it. Just because there's other great movies out there.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. And like I said, it's probably been 5-6 years since the last time I watched it. But yeah. It's one you can always definitely come back to.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't complain about coming back to it.
It's one of those movies that, you know, you could watch this with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And both of you would enjoy it just as much even now. I mean, back then, you know, our parents watched it with us. And enjoyed it as much as we did. And now it still holds up to the point where you can go back and watch it with your kids and they like it as much as you do.
Seriously, this movie came out the year my mom graduated high school.
Yeah,
seriously?
Well,
yeah, right about.
Then my math is off.
She was 20 when she had me. I was born in 86.
Yeah. So,
right about the year.
Yeah, I think.
Anyway, does anybody know what time it is?
It's time for Rod's Rants.
It's time for Rod's Rants.
Rod, are you singing this time?
I'm not singing.
Uh-huh.
We covered this earlier.
Okay. Yes, but I was clarifying for our audience.
We'll see what next week brings, but no, I'm not singing tonight. Okay. I like it. I can't explain why I like it, but I do. It's like when your girlfriend uses her pinky at the end of a hot session of Down and Dirty Pig sex. You just can't figure it out why, but you like it. We have Saturday Night Live cast. We have a green slimy thing. Could be the ghost of John Belushi. Could be the ghost of my nutsack. Either way, it eats a shit ton. We have androgyny, marshmallow man, bestiality, bullshit science, Rick Moranis, fucked up librarians, portable nuclear accelerators, tons of white goo, human sacrifices, dogs, cats living together, mass hysteria, and God, why do I like this movie? Fuck it, I'm out.
Nice.
I kept it simple this time around.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you did. It's still good.
And mostly G-rated for the first time in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. You know, there's that pinky comment, which am I the only one who likes that? Maybe I'm just weird.
Yeah, pretty much.
I like it. Can't lie.
There was the pig sex comment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody likes Down and Dirty Pig Sex once in a while.
No, Rod.
We don't want to share our love life with you, so you can just get over it. Stop asking for hints.
Rod, not everybody in the world likes fucking the kinds of women that you do. Some of us have standards.
Funny. That is not what Down and Dirty Pig Sex means, and you know it.
I'm not the one over here talking about pig sex.
Anyways, pig sex is when you're just rooting around.
Well, stop trying to ask for hints on our love life. We're not giving you any.
I thought pig sex was when you were trying to fuck her off the trough.
That is not as easy as you'd think.
And Rod knows.
Okay, so like and dislike. Carl, were you hard or flaccid there in this one?
Hard. Until Rick Moranis opened his mouth.
Funny, it seemed to be the other way for Lisa. I mean, what?
Oh. Oh. I'm going to reach through this mic and slap you.
Oh, let's face facts. Rick Moranis is such a tiny person, he could give blowjob to a clit.
Yeah, probably. He's not trying on me.
Anyway, Lisa, wet or frigid during this movie, my comments notwithstanding.
Actually, mm-hmm. A little moist until Rick Moranis stepped out onto the screen. Then it was more like I was frigid.
Wow, everybody hates on Rick Moranis tonight. I'm loving it.
At least for this movie.
Okay. So anyway, this got me about as hard as a 19-year-old Vietnamese girl screaming, "Me sucky long time." For those of you who don't know me, that's pretty damn hard.
For the ladybug.
What? No, seriously, all I caught was...
Ladybug.
What are you talking
about? Yeah, for the ladybug. You might be able to fill her out.
I have no idea what you're talking about now. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. Next week will be Sacrifice in the Buff, which just sounds dirty.
That sounds really dirty. Yeah, it does.
Best I could tell, it's a crime action thriller starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and Christian Slater, and that's really all I know.
Make it a good movie.
Blank. A second Christian Slater movie, though, since... Want to say this? Okay.
Since that awful movie in week four.
That's what I was trying to avoid right there.
Hey, and we're doing Sacrifice because, you know, Hard Rain's not streaming and Pump Up the Volume's not streaming. And I don't even think Broken Arrow is streaming.
It used to be, is it not?
I don't know.
Anyway.
If any of those become streaming between now and next week, then we might do them instead.
There you go. I'm kind of curious about this one, to be honest. And I like going in on a blank slate occasionally.
Yeah, I do too.
So anyway, from now on, keep watching those movies in the buff because it's just better that way. And whatever you do, don't cross the streams. Good night, folks.
Night.
Good night.
Hello, buffers. It's your favorite host. I'm taking a second to let you know you can find us on Facebook and Google+, and have some absolutely naughty conversations with your other buffers. And as always, if you need to talk or flirt with our team of debauchery, you can email us at inthebufffilms@gmail.com. That's 3 F's. Trust me, we love to talk to our fans, especially the good-looking ones. Movies in the Buff was recorded with Creative Commons, Attribution Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0 U.S. License.